Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Natasha Rosewood. She's a psychic coach, author, TV and radio personality, an international columnist, and she also does various things through her website, such as issuing an e-zine and a newsletter. So, welcome to the program, Natasha.
Oh, thank you, Michael, for having me on. I've been looking forward to this show for a while.
Great. Well, I've been reading up a little bit about you, and you're certainly a very interesting character. And by the looks of all the things you get into, you're also quite busy because you do your book writing as well. Must take up quite a bit of time. Right. Question. You said that you studied people of many beliefs and cultures. Now, what were you looking for when you did those studies, bearing in mind that you're primarily a psychic? Did you learn something from that that helped you?
Absolutely. And at the time, Mike, I didn't know that I was psychic. That really, the real true confirmation of it came much later when I was about 32, 33. And by that time, I'd already spent some time in about four different countries and traveled around Europe this way and that way and lived in some of those countries, including Norway, Germany, Switzerland, and then Libya. And I was just always fascinated, to answer your question, by humanity and what made us tick and why certain things happen to some people and not to others. And what was this pattern behind the seeming chaos? I think that's what I was looking for, was the pattern, which I found in energy. And really now, that's what I study, is energy and how universal energy works with our psychology, our spirituality, burgeoning spirituality, and our consciousness, and also our mentality. So in the first book, I think I'm psychic and you can be too, I've told my stories, and some of them were train wrecks and some of them were happy stories.
Right, yes.
I've added what I call metaphysical endnotes to the end of each chapter to explain why that thing happened to that particular person, as much as I could surmise anyway,
to
help other people understand why those things happened to them.
Yes. Now, you say that you know we are all psychic. How are people supposed to identify that ability within? I mean, how would they know? Does it happen without them knowing?
I think it happens without them knowing, Mike. So many people come to my psychic development workshops and they think that they're not psychic when they walk in the door. And by the end of the day, I've pointed out how many times they have picked up on energy through their sensory perception, through their feelings. And I think we all have the experience where we think about somebody and then they call us, or we have an idea about who's on the phone, this kind of thing, because I think we're all sensory beings. And I think it's in the invisible, in the psychic realm, where we experience our true relationship. When we get together and talk to each other and we're coming from our ego minds, that's when the smoke screen comes in. But the truth of our relationships, I think, is communicated psychically through the airwaves. And once people realize that, once I point out to them, oh, this was actually a psychic hit you had, this was intuition, they'll go, oh, I didn't realize that. And they start to build on the acknowledgement of that, and they start to build strength in that. Because to me, intuition and psychic ability is like a muscle. And the more we give it credit, the more we use it, the stronger it gets.
Right. So are you saying that intuition and psychic ability are really one and the same?
I would say intuition is the door that opens, and then when people start to go through that and they widen the lens, that's when they actually become psychic. So when I say we are all psychic, I think we all have the ability if we allow it to be there, to be psychic and to know much more than we're giving ourselves credit for. So because when I start to ask people questions, they'll say, Natasha, what do you think? You know, you're the psychic. You tell me what my future is going to be. And what I do as a psychic coach is encourage people to connect with their own psychic ability and their own answers, because the truth is within them. And I'll say, no, when I ask you, when I present you with this side of the story and this decision, how does that feel within you? And they'll say, well, not so good. And then when I present them with the other, and I say, well, this could be your truth, how does that feel? And they'll say, oh, that feels great. And I say, well, there you are. That is how you check in with yourself to find out what is your higher truth. And your body is a barometer of the spirit, so the spirit speaks to us through our physical body, and that is our intuition and our psychic ability as well, because the spirit knows.
Right. Now, you said that every person has the choice to make his or her own future. I wonder sometimes if people realize that they need to plan their future.
Well, I'm a big believer in letting go, letting God as well. Because if I try and with my little pea brain ego mind getting in the way of myself, my future tends to become somewhat constricted. So what I tend to do for myself, and I encourage my clients to do this, is envision the end result. So the end result might be something as generic as being joyful or finding your soulmate or becoming more prosperous. Or sometimes it can be really specific about, well, I want that particular house on the hill and I want to be living there by July 31st. And I'm a big believer in saying, plant the seed, imagine that it's already yours or something similar or something better, claim it as yours, and then let go and let the universe bring it to you. So I think it's a mixture, Mike. You know, I think there are some things we've come back to do. I think there is a theme to each of our lives that we have agreed to do, like a movie script. For example, for some people it might be stepping into their power or learning humility or saving the human race or something that is very specific to their soul journey. And I think as long as we're on the path of unfolding that those lessons and learning those lessons and evolving our own soul in that way, the universe doesn't really care how we do it. So I think we can choose within this framework is, you know, whether we live in the big house or the little house, whether we're happy or miserable as we go along, but that as long as we're doing the work that we came here to do, that is, I feel, what's written in stone.
Hmm. Do you think that most people realize that they have a spiritual side and that also needs developing?
I think more and more people are. I started doing this work 35 years ago in England, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a clue I was psychic. I was just fascinated by palmistry and, as I say, what makes people tick and how does this all work? Because I sensed there was this pattern, like I say, to the energy. And at that time, I felt like I was speaking Russian to people. They would look at me like I had three heads and they go, what are you talking about? But now, and I'm sure, I know it's the same in the UK as it is here in Canada and the rest of the Western world, that people are really waking up, Mike. And I talk to people now, and sometimes they teach me things. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know. It's wonderful because it makes me feel very good that people have woken up. And the way I see this in the most common way is that people realize that they are creating their reality and they are taking responsibility for what they create, for their attitude, for their way of thinking. And they realize that what they focus on and what they are thinking all the time is going to create their reality. And they have the prerogative to change that. So it's very empowering. And I think people are much more empowered these days than they used to be in the good old days back in the 1980s and before that. I mean, I think this movement obviously started in the 1960s, but it might have started way before then. And the 1960s was a manifestation of this freedom of choice and, you know, love, bringing love back to the planet.
You're going back to the days of the flower people, aren't you, with their love?
That's right. And the Beatles songs. I mean, I don't know about you, but I grew up with the Beatles. They were a huge influence on me and, of course, the rest of the world. And I think their songs were so simple yet so complex, really. And I think they spoke to that part of us that wanted to awaken and be in joy and be in love.
Yes, I'm sure you're right. They came really, I think, and fulfilled a need that young people had, which is why they became so popular.
Yes, and I hope, you know, that music is still popular today and continues on today. And in my experience here, as you know, I've written about having this contact, this experience with, I call it another dimension, and I call them beings from divine intelligence, that we can bring more and more joy to the world and encourage people to step into that vibration of joy. Because as we all know, 2012 is coming up next year, and there's a lot of different versions of what's going to happen on that day. But my teaching right now is to say to people, being in joy and being in love is the greatest vibration you could be in, and that will be your protection, whatever is going to happen.
Right. Now, I know you have positive views of your own about what is going to happen on the 21st of December next year. So tell our listeners the way you see that.
Well, the way I see it, Mike, is that if there's any time to be afraid, it would be now, because I think there's always chaos before growth, as we know it. And I think we're building up to that particular date. And if anything is going to happen on that date at all, I mean, it might be a red herring like Y2K, but in my own mind, that's when the new we step into a new paradigm. And it's just like, to me, this is what my sense of it is, that it's like we'll be passing through liquid glass, be like jelly, and that we'll be stepping into this new dimension where we're have been working towards lifting up the vibration of our spirits. There will be people, and there are people now who are leaving the planet in droves, because maybe, I'm not saying this is so, but maybe this is because they have decided on some level that they don't want to go into this higher dimension. They don't want to stay on planet Earth and go through this transition. So they've decided to opt out. And I think a lot of those people will go to another planet. This is what I was told by divine intelligence, where they will continue their evolution at their own pace. But those many brave souls who want to stay and are very excited about the new paradigm that's coming in are going to stick around. And I think I'm ecstatic and I'm very excited about what's coming in, because for years I've had access to this information and I felt very alone with it and a little bit crazy, dare I say. But over the last 20, 30 years since I've had that experience, there's been all kinds of writers writing about the same information and saying that we're moving up into this high vibration, into the away from the third physical dimension into the fourth, fifth, and sixth, and that in that place we can do all kinds of things with our energy that we didn't believe was possible before.
I absolutely go along with that. In fact, you have referred to it as ascension, which I think exactly fits what is going to take place. Now, I believe some of that information came to you when you had a period when you went in and out of trances, and you said ultimately that there would be heaven on earth.
On the new earth,
of course.
I'm sorry?
I was going to say, on the new earth, of course.
On the new earth, of course.
Yes.
And I've been getting glimpses of that heaven on earth, Mike, over the last few years. I've been working very hard on myself to stay in joy, to stay in the present, to stay in gratitude, to be trusting of the world, even though when we look around it may look like the world is going to hell in a handbasket. Interestingly enough, I was in Libya 30 years ago, and people have asked me, you know, how do I feel about what's happening in Libya now? And I just say I was surprised it didn't happen then, that it's taken so long for people to really rise up against, you know, the powers that be there.
Yes.
And so it makes sense to me now that this is all coming. Everything that's dark energy or that's been repressed or oppressed or suppressed, whatever word you want to use, and has been, shall we say, coming from the dark side, is now actually being brought out into the open so we can see it, we can identify it, and we can heal it, and we can clean it up.
Yes.
So I think before we go through what I call this liquid glass into the new paradigm, we've got to clean up our energy. And the way, when I'm doing my soul talks around the country and I talk about how can we bring heaven to earth, the analogy I use is that currently we're all living in the mud flats and we're wading around in this mud, dealing with the same stuff we've been dealing with for centuries. But we're just starting to see, when we look up, there's this beautiful house up on the hill in the bright sunshine. And we're going to go up there. We know we're going. That's where we're going to end up. So we don't want to take the mud with us. So we have to clean up the mud. And that's our job right now on the planet. And so what happened in Egypt was beautiful because it was quite a smooth transition. What's happening in Libya is very sad. But it's going to be resolved one way or the other, and I think for the better. And all these other Arab countries that are saying, we want to be free, we want to be our own people and think our own thoughts and be free to express ourselves. And that really has to happen on the planet in order for us to move up into this higher dimension or do ascension, as you say.
Yes, again, I agree with you totally there. Do you think that because in the West we are a bit more affluent, that these changes will take longer to come in? Because possibly, although things are getting a bit rough, do we not feel a little bit too comfortable to sort of react to it at the moment?
Well, actually, I would say it's the opposite, that because we are affluent, we have the luxury of going to workshops with Deepak Chopra and
yes,
doing a Buddhist weekend, whereas people in these other cultures are so busy just in survival.
Mm.
There's so much in survival. But I would say to you that a lot of people in the Western world are very busy. They get caught up in the rush, rush, rush. But I think when I hear people speak and I deal with people from all groups of society, all demographics, that people are really wanting to get back to their essence, to get back to being still and quiet and growing their own vegetables and maybe having a few chickens in the backyard. And I think we're all sensing that something's going to maybe collapse, and it might be technology. I mean, an asteroid might knock out a satellite. Or, you know, there's all kinds of conspiracy theories about what different
yes,
governments are doing. So it might be that at one point we have to make do with that technology and we're going to be forced to go back to our primal roots. And so I think it's a very mixed bag, Mike. But what I see in the world is that people are really searching for to go back to, as you say, connecting to the light, is connecting to their own light and connecting to their own truth and what is real and what is illusion.
Yes, I think that summed it up very well. You spoke about these beings. Are they actually your spirit guides? And either way around, how do they help you?
Well, I have to say that this experience happened to me in 1986. And I'd just been to see a psychic, and she told me yet again, as many psychics did, oh my gosh, Natasha, you're very powerful and you're very psychic. And at that time, it really scared me, because I really considered myself to be very British and normal and conservative, and I was a businesswoman, and although I was fascinated by anything to do with the invisible, including ETs and astrology and I Ching, anything that talked about that was mystical, I was fascinated by. So I'd done a lot of studying already to that point, and then I went on a brief holiday with a friend of mine down to Oregon, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but Oregon is a very spiritual place, especially Cannon Beach, a place called Cannon Beach. It's very beautiful, and to me it has some kind of electric energy going on there anyway. And these beings came to me in one of these trances, and as you say, Mike, I was in and out, and I would be in this trance for maybe 2 hours, and I would be receiving all this information, and my friend was fortunately writing furious notes, because I wouldn't have remembered even a tenth of this if it had been up to me. And one of the trances was when these, I would call them asexual beings, appeared in the room, and they actually brought tears to my eyes, because they were so incredibly beautiful. And the only way I can describe them is to say that they were joy. It was just pure joy. And they told me all kinds of things, but one of the things that they told me was that the energy on the planet would speed up. Now, this is back in 1986, even before faxes and internet. And it would really speed up, and that there would be individuals that would rise up and speak of a higher consciousness, and that these individuals would attract other people. They would form clusters, and then these clusters would join together. And ultimately, the population on planet Earth would divide, not necessarily into two equal parts, but there would be those on one side of the fence who were very excited and willing to go forward towards this higher consciousness and awareness. And on the other side, there would be those who would be clinging to the old ways, to the greed and the selfishness and the power hungry, you know, the negative power I'm talking about. And those people wouldn't be able to exist on the planet, because this energy that was coming in would be like a huge tidal wave of energy washing over all of us. But those that had risen up and opened their minds and were willing to embrace this higher awareness would, you know, be uncomfortable for a little while, but then they'd rise up and they'd swim with this wave of energy, and they would remain on the planet. There would be peace on the planet for a long period of time. Those that didn't want to rise up would leave the planet and, that, like I say, go to this other place in the universe and continue their evolution at their own place, at their own pace.
Yes.
And this actually now is starting to manifest.
Yes.
I start to see people when they're, which side of the fence they're choosing.
Well, again, I agree with you entirely. I think there are another group of people that are so fixed in their present beliefs that they find it very difficult to respond to any other beliefs. Maybe this is particularly relevant with people who have a very strong religious upbringing, but they might be, I guess, the hardest people to reach.
Well, I work on the premise, Mike, that anybody that needs to hear the information I have to offer, they will come to me. I definitely don't try and beat anybody over the head with my beliefs. I gave that one up a long time ago because I feel that when people come to me, they have been guided by their spirit guides. And those people that have closed minds, they will have closed minds no matter what. They've got to come to it in their own time, in their own way. And it's not to say that you have to go and see a psychic or you have to go meditate on the top of a mountain. I think we're all getting the messages that we're ready to hear at this time, wherever we hear them from. And I would say this, though. I kind of feel sorry for those people that aren't open to this beautiful magic that's coming in. And I would say they're going to find it increasingly difficult because all the negative thinking is going to be amplified. So it's kind of like having your radio tuned to a hard rock station and then cranking it up like 500%. Mm-hmm. And it's those people are going to be living like with this din in their heads until they're willing to let go and get back into faith and trust and forgiveness and love and gratitude and all those high vibrational energies.
Yes. I mean, I've come across people that really have a problem in moving forward, and I find often they are those who have had some hard experiences in life, and they say, why would God allow this? Why does God allow something else? And they put the blame elsewhere and don't realize that in part or maybe total that they have created their own reality.
Exactly. Because my take on that is that God has given us this playground in which to play and grow. And I believe that humanity has incredible potential, and I get impatient with it because I see how it often self-destructs. And we have self-destructed before. We have got to this point before where we could have ascended. And Atlantis is just one example where we were a very advanced culture, but I think the ego got in the way yet again, and we self-destroyed instead of being creative and going to the next level. I pray and hope, and I think the jury is still out on this one, whether we rise above it or not, but I do believe that we will, that we are the ones, we are the co-creators with God, and sure, we can ask for God's help and God's support when we're on the right track. But I gave up blaming God a long time ago for anything that was going on. And when something happens in my life that I don't like very much, I go, okay, what was I thinking that I created that I thought I deserved to have that experience? Or what is the lesson for me in this? And also, what is the gift for me in this? Because when I come out the other side of that and I just hold the vision that there is a gift in this, adversity, if I just hold on to that belief, then I'm shown the gift. And I go, oh, okay, now I get it. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I've had my own fair share of adversity, or train wrecks, as I like to call them, which I outline in my first book. And I try and have a sense of humor about it, especially after the fact. And yes. That helps me rise above it and see where it's made me stronger. It's taught me humility. It's taught me compassion. I came from a very, I think, judgmental culture, and I've had to learn to really let that go and really have compassion for all beings, no matter where they are in their evolution, and to allow, you know, just to allow people and things to be. And even though I don't understand sometimes why it's happening and I get angry and upset just like the rest of humanity, but I hang on in those first few moments and say, okay, there's going to be a gift in this. I don't know how long it's going to take me to see it, but there will be.
Right. Now, you're certainly correct when you talk about humor. And indeed, it comes over quite clearly in your case, because I love the title, or part of the title of your second book, where you say, I thought you were dead. Now, I could imagine meeting an old friend and saying, I thought you were dead. I would think he'd be very pleased.
Well, this was actually, there was a bit of a story to this, Mike. Can I share that with you?
Yes, by all means.
I was struggling with the title of this second book. I thought about, oh, I see ghosts and you can too. And I sat down with a friend and we were brainstorming for an hour and we still didn't come up with the title. And in my first book, I Think I'm Psychic, I did tell the story about how my fiancé passed away suddenly a week after he proposed of a heart attack, which was obviously one of those train wrecks in my life.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, 5 years or 10 years later after that, I was going for my morning walk along the beach where I live, which is very beautiful, and this truck came along and stopped, and the man at the wheel stopped and asked us for directions. And my first thought was that it wasn't just the spitting image of my fiancé, Carl. He was actually him. And in my mind, I went, oh, I thought you were dead. And so I went, oh, my God, I've got my book title. So yeah. That's how that came about.
Well, I never. What a funny way to get to it.
Well, right. And I like to keep it light, you know, because I think what's the point of being enlightened if you can't keep it light and laugh and have a good time, basically.
Right, so you, this book you're talking about, is that the one that covers psychic development?
They both do, actually, Mike. On my book tour, I've been promoting both books as a set. One is, the first one is about me really opening up to my psychic ability and explaining the differences, for example, between intuitiveness and psychic ability, and how to protect yourself, how to ground, obviously, lessons about boundaries. And the second one comprises 20 stories of my experiences, my personal and professional experiences from being a psychic. So people get to see how energy can manifest in all its different forms. So, of course, I see dead people, and I deal with ghosts, and I help people with their past life, their own ghosts, where they've got stuck in past lives, their soul retrieval, reclaiming that part of themselves that's still stuck in a past life so that they can move forward. So anything I do, it's always about empowerment and facilitating the person in acknowledging and believing in their own sensory perception.
Right. When you have your people at the workshops and you talk maybe about their problems, what actually indicates to you that they have a past life problem?
I can, as a psychic, I can normally feel it. It feels like something stuck in their throat, you know. It's kind of something stuck in the energy, and it's come to a grinding halt. And so when we get stuck, and as I'm sure you know this one, when we get stuck because of an old trauma or something's upset us, and we can't seem to get past it, that a pattern will start to repeat itself, and we get the same lesson over and over again. Maybe in different forms, but it's the same lesson. And a great example of that is going for the same destructive relationship all the time. So that's number one. Number two, when I say to the person, I feel like, you know, you spent a lifetime in France in the 1700s, and you were, maybe you were killed at the guillotine, or I feel like your throat was, you know, your head was cut off. And often people will go, oh, my God. You know, they'll have some kind of recognition.
Yes.
And then we'll go back from that trauma and we'll go back into a story. And I get the person just to make up a story about what might have happened that they ended up getting their head cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to the root of maybe their guilt or their fear of abandonment or their sense of betrayal, or that their soulmate didn't come back and rescue them. It's really fascinating because it goes back to the origin of the pain. And once we bring that out to the conscious mind and we just bat it around a bit and I say, okay, pretend this is a bad movie and that you want it to have a happy ending. How would you end it. And it might be that they realize that somebody did come back actually in to save them, and they nearly went to the guillotine, but they actually didn't actually go through with it. Mm-hmm. So the mind is an amazing thing, because it can change the sense of power in your own being. And once we get a happy ending and the mind kind of can play with that a little bit, it takes the trauma out of the cellular memory, and it puts the person back in power and saying, oh, even though I think this happened, maybe it didn't, and I have the ability to change it. So in that way, actually, we can change our past, and we can change our physiology. And then we can
I was going to say, without help, do you think it's possible for people to actually identify what the blockage is?
I think some people are becoming more and more aware, yes. I think sometimes they can identify it, but maybe they can't get rid of it. They can't dissolve it themselves. I think that's pretty tough, because the ego always wants to get in the way and keep us stuck in some ways. It's not to say that some of us can't do that. I think you need to be very awake and conscious. I think obviously meditation is a wonderful tool for that. And sometimes just by asking our own mind, what is it I need to learn here? Where am I stuck? And I think the mind, if we just ask the questions of our own mind, our minds will give us the truth. And I think, you know, by doing it that way, yes, I think it's very possible. But I always recommend having somebody guide you through that process, and somebody that's intuitive that can ask the right questions.
Yes. Right. What do you mean by soul retrieval?
Well, this is a very interesting dynamic, Mike, and I didn't know about this until I've been reading probably for about 20 years. And there's a story in my second book about a lady who I met her mother first, and her mother, I was at a big, huge event, and I'd finished doing all the readings. I'd done 4 hours of mini readings in this very big restaurant with lots of noise, so my throat was almost gone. My voice had almost gone. And this woman came up to me and she said, I just have to talk to you. So I made an appointment with her for the next day, and I sensed her anguish was about her child. And I sensed that her child, who was a young woman, about 23, 24, was very ill, because she had one foot in this life and one foot in a past. Mm-hmm. And I said to the mother, I would need to see your daughter firsthand so I could really help her. And I said, if you can get some 20, 30 people together, I'll come to where you live. I'll fly out, and I can meet your daughter and I can work with her. So that's what happened. 2 months later, I was sitting in front of her daughter, and I just felt that this poor girl had been in a past life in France during the time of the Huguenots. There had been a rebellion or a fight, and her soulmate had come to see her at his own risk. He was very much in danger. They were madly, madly in love, and somebody heard about his movements, had followed him there, and killed him right in front of her. And she was, her spirit, her soul, piece of her soul, was stuck in that same place. I said, you're probably still haunting that inn in France. And that's why you're ill, because only half of you or a piece of you is here. So I didn't feel comfortable at that time with dealing with that kind of level of trauma. So I found somebody to help her, and she did. She brought back that piece of her soul, forgave herself for, she thought she was responsible for her soulmate's death, and she's gone on to have a productive life in this lifetime.
Oh, that's a very nice story,
I must
admit.
I like that one too.
Yeah, well, it had a happy ending.
Yes, that's right, we like happy endings.
Of course we do, yes. Have you found that it's more recent lifetimes that affect people at the moment, or can they in fact go back literally 1,000 years or so?
It depends on the person. I had a very dear friend who I find she's extremely gifted psychically. She's actually got a lot of power available to her, but I feel like she is refusing to let go of something on some level that happened in the 1300s. And we kind of joke about it now, but I would, you know, I urge her and say, please let it go. Let's do a regression on it. And, you know, it's this guilt. And I feel like she was responsible. She might have been a leader, for example. And a lot of people got killed either inadvertently or deliberately under her leadership. And she's still feeling that guilt. Mm. And this is why I say forgiveness, even if you don't know what you have to forgive, is so important at this time, because forgiveness, I think, above all else, will release us from the past. I don't think we even need to know what we did or what we didn't do, but if we say, I often say to myself, I am innocent, and I forgive and am forgiven. So I'm free, and I'm not attached by any spiritual umbilical cords to anybody from my past, and that I'm free to move forward. So, yes, there are some people carrying stuff forward for decades and centuries, and I have seen that. But I will say this too, Mike, that I feel now it's like our spirits, our souls are culminating at we're coming to the end of a soul cycle in some way. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important that we clean up and we forgive ourselves and we forgive others and we let go, so we can have this pure energy that we can move through the glass into this clearer paradigm and be very transparent and not carry any muddiness in our energy. And to divine intelligence or our spirit guides, I think that's how we would appear if we are still carrying energies that we haven't forgiven.
Mm. Again, I'm totally with you on that idea, and I think forgiving yourself is extremely important. Now, what value are dreams to us?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I love dreams. I feel, and I incorporate dream interpretation as part of my psychic development workshop. I feel that if we paid attention to our dreams and learn how to really listen to them and interpret them, that we wouldn't need psychics and we wouldn't need shrinks. Because our dreams are telling us really what the truth is. And as my very indigo niece once said to me, Auntie, sometimes I think that the dream world is the real world, and this is just an illusion. And yes. She was, I think, 7 years old at the time, and I looked at her and went, who are you?
Yes.
It took me 45 years to figure that one out. I feel that the dream world is going to become probably more and more, it's going to blend more and more with our conscious state as we wake up. I think our subconscious is going to become more accessible as we become more conscious. Right now, it's the way I see it is the conscious mind is like the pea at the top of a pyramid, if you like, and, you know, a big chunk of what's below is the subconscious, and most of us aren't in touch, unless we meditate or we're psychic, we're not in touch with our own subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of dangerous, because it's what's embedded in our subconscious that draws our reality to us. Our belief systems, our past lives, our vibrational energy. And that's why people go, why did this happen to me? And I go, well, guess what? Guess what you're carrying in your subconscious? You've got this great big magnet that says, I don't deserve anything good. So guess what's going to show up? Nothing good.
Right.
Right.
So
that's where the dreams come in.
Sorry, carry on.
So, you know, by exploring our dreams and understanding our own symbology, I'm sure you can get the dream interpretation books, but they're all different. But I, you know, if you read Carl Jung, I'm a big fan of his, And there's a very good book by, I think it's Anne Powell. It's called The Dream Game. And mm-hmm. she talks a lot about the power within us, the underdog versus the overdog, and our powerlessness or our powerfulness. Mm-hmm. So it's very good to understand in our dreams where are we putting ourselves down? Where are we allowing ourselves to be afraid? Where are we angry and not expressing it? So, you know, all that stuff is in us, and it's creating our reality in our waking lives. So it's right. good to know about dreams.
Is the subconscious something that you refer to as the cellular memory?
I would say that, yes. It's definitely, well, the cellular memory, I think, is in the soul and the spirit and the subconscious. I think, yes, I probably agree with you there, Mike. It's kind of like the physical manifestation of the subconscious memories.
Right. Now, time is rapidly speeding by, and I do want to give you sufficient time to talk about your website and the various services that you offer. So would you like to give details of your books, where they can be obtained, your website address, and what people do if they want readings?
Thank you very much, Mike. And by the way, I'm so glad you agree with me.
Well, I do. Yes, I do.
I love people when they make me right. Just kidding. Okay, my website is www.natasha psychic.com. Basically, people can go there and order the books from there. My email address is natasha@natashapsychic.com. And my phone number in Canada is 604-886-5718. All that information is on the website. Right now, Mike, I'm actually going through a little bit of a, shall we call it, a publishing faux pas. So I've temporarily retracted my books from online bookstores until this gets sorted out. I won't go into detail, but if people do want my books, they can go to my website. I know they are available through Indigos and Chapters and bookstores across Canada and into the U.S. as well. But please just go to the website and you'll see where they are available. What I offer in terms of psychic readings are phone readings, so I currently read for people all over the world. And I offer 30-minute readings, 45-minute, 60-minute, and 90-minute readings for approximately $120 Canadian for the half hour, up to $200 for the hour, and $250 for the hour and a half. Those rates are also on my website. I do in-person past life regressions, and I have done a few by phone as well. I also offer psychic coaching, so if anybody wants to develop their own psychic ability and just would like to have, say, 4 one-hour sessions, I offer a course for $400 or $375 if it's paid ahead of time. If you go to my website, you'll see that I put my articles on my blog. And if you would like to subscribe to my newsletter, again, go to the website and just sign up. And I send a newsletter out about once a month with a little bit of spiritual information, inspiration, hopefully, and talking a lot about December 12, 2012, the ascension process. How can we prepare ourselves and make it much easier on ourselves as we go into this high vibration of energy? Mm-hmm. I'm working on a third book, but that's a book of ghost stories, which is fictionalized stories of some things that happened to me. So they're pretty intriguing. And basically, in those stories, I mess with people's heads and talking about the different dimensions. So it's, I have fun with my work. And this year, I'm going to be offering to corporations and organizations, including schools, a course called Energy Dynamics. And as you know, Mike, you know, not everybody is open to the word psychic. So I plan to just change the language slightly, but go into organizations and teach them how they can use the energy that's available to them to work more cohesively, creatively, and collaboratively so that they can increase the bottom line and basically improve the quality of their experience in the workplace.
Now, are your past life regressions, again, a separate sort of fee, or are they the same as the normal psychic readings?
No, they are pretty intense. So they normally take about 2 hours. I allow 2 hours at least, and they are $275 for those 2 hours. And by the way, that all those prices include taxes and an MP3 recording. So basically, if I read for somebody in South Africa, I can just email it to email the reading as an email attachment after the reading, and people can pay by PayPal or credit card, or if they prefer money order, they can mail that to me before the appointment.
Right. So it sounds as though you're normally a pretty busy person.
I am.
I notice also, just to put a PS onto what you said, you can also work from photographs.
Yes, I do all kinds of different things. People ask me, what do I use? And basically I say, whatever it takes. But if people email me photographs, absolutely, that can be really fascinating. I also do psychometry, which is the reading of objects. And I have done, you know, some detective work, finding lost people and lost things in that way. So basically, you know, the tools are out there, so whatever it takes to use. But I really strongly rely on my own psychic ability, Mike, more than anything else.
Right.
Because as you asked me before, yes, I do feel those beings are my guides. And they're the ones that give me the downloads of information that I'm talking to you about right now.
Right. Now, a little personal request here.
Okay.
When you're talking about dreams, I so many times dream I'm walking through buildings, down streets, and I can never find what I'm looking for, and I don't actually know what I'm looking for. I just feel lost. A quickie explanation for that type of thing, because I think a lot of people get those sort of dreams.
Yes, they do. I would say that you know what you want, but you're not yet willing to take responsibility for it. What I would suggest you do, Mike, is write out that dream, as you just told me, and then finish the dream off in the way that you want to have it be finished off. So, for example, you're walking down the street, you turn left into a building, and you walk into the foyer, and there are your spirit guides, and they sit you down at the table, and they show you a future video or movie of what it is you're looking for. And
I'll try that one, yes.
Try it, and just play with it. Again, you know, that is a prime example of you might get stuck in that because, again, in your waking state, your ego may want to get in the way and say, ooh, Mike, you don't really want to know this, right? But if I was to work with you, I use also neuro-linguistic programming, I would play a little bit of a trickery and go in the back door of your ego and get you to fess up to what it is you really want
and get
to the bottom of that.
Now, regretfully, I've got to say, Natasha, that we've reached the end of the program and I need a minute to announce next week's guest.
Okay.
It's been extremely interesting talking with you and I'm sure our listeners have thoroughly enjoyed it as well. So thank you very much for coming onto the program.
It's been a great pleasure, Mike, and thank you. And blessings to everybody who's listening.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, friends,
next week I have Dr. Roy Martina, who's a holistic medical doctor. He's into self-healing, health, coaching, and personal development. And he's written a book recently called Emotional Balance, about enriching your life and healing the past, which is what we're mainly going to talk about. So thank you very much for being with me today. I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all.